This is the Planning Commission work session for Thursday, September 1st, 2016.
Good evening. Simple code amendment proposal in front of the Planning Commission. Following passage of a bill in the 2015 legislative session, this would allow an option for builders to apply for a deferral of payment of impact fees on single-family attached and detached construction. The bill had some provisions about when the payment would be made, either at final inspection, certificate of occupancy, or closing of the first date of the new housing units, but not more than 18 months after the issuance of a building permit. A limitation on how many deferrals per applicant, unless there's a code amendment. Granting and recording of a lien. An allowance for application or administrative expenses. And then provision to authorize foreclosure on properties if the fees are unpaid after the deferral period. So essentially, the code amendment would add a new section to Title 40610. It would be Section 045, additional provisions for deferral of impact fees for single-family housing. And you'll see the language, it's all starting on page 2. There are three subsections, A, B, and C. C has what the application for deferral would require: a covenant, a deferral period, executing a release of the lien, and then again the foreclosure proceedings. So pretty simple, straightforward. One reason we've not brought this forward earlier is, in part, we're implementing a new electronic permitting system, and we're looking at how we implement any fee changes and payment of fee changes in with that new system. So I wanted to wait until there was a window of time that we had between a couple different implementation phases. And now is probably the most optimal time before we release something toward the first or middle part of October. So if you have any questions, I can answer them or attempt to answer them. This is fairly consistent with what the City of Vancouver is doing. So for builders who work in the largest city in the county of Vancouver, and then in Clark County, there would be a very similar treatment here.
So, Marty, it occurs to me, first of all, that there's a, and this is my fault.
Okay.
Just to make it clear, typo in the third line of number one on page 3, where it should say shall, but it says, second line, but it says all. The covenant hall be signed by all owners. That should be shall. The other question I have is, and it would have been helpful perhaps if I had read the statute, I didn't. Local governments can limit the number of deferrals to 20 per applicant annually. I don't see anything in this code provision that does that.
So the code provision is required that if you choose not to have a limitation, so a builder can apply for 30 or 40 or 50 deferrals in a year.
Okay. So the default is?
The default is 20. If we decided that that's all we're going to defer, in which case I know some of the building community would be interested in more than 20 of these in a year, we would be coming in into a into the Planning Commission and the board for a code amendment. TIFs are collected, all impact fees are collected at issuance of building permit, when we issue the building permit. So this just makes it, when we have builders calling in for final inspection, they would pay the impact fees. Upon receipt of that payment, we would release the lien from the what's been recorded, and they would move on.
If there's a 30-house development, do you have to apply each house for deferral?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes. Each parcel has a separate covenant. It binds the it's binding on the property and heirs and successors, so if a new builder takes over, it's their responsibility to make the payment. This is something that the this is something that's been in the works for at least 3 or 4 years in the legislature. At least, and it's never made any traction to get passage, and finally last year, that I think with some of these limitations and keeping it single family, and just without a code amendment, a limitation of 20 to really provide incentives for the smaller home builders, it finally made its way through the legislature and passed into law. So this has been something that we've been knowing that it's going to be on the, you know, it's coming up, it's just a matter of time.
So as a practical matter, if the developer, or when the developer sold the lot to the builder, the lien would probably be cleared, I would expect.
No, it's on title.
It is, the form of the covenant would make it binding on all successors and interest on the party.
And the developer would never apply for this. The builder would apply for this. This is at the time. Normally when you go to, if you're going to build a house, or if you have a buyer going to build a house, the builder goes and picks up permits. And at that time, when they're building that individual house, the plat's already done, that's going to have to pay all of the impact fees.
But if the builder doesn't own the property, then people who do own the property have to sign it, or the entity that owns the property has to sign it.
If that were the case there, I guess, it was, yeah. So I'm seeing more to his question. In that case, the developer probably wouldn't be selling it to the builder.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the idea is that it is binding on everybody who owns the property until it's paid. And when it's paid, then the county records a release of the lien and the plat is lifted from the title.
Is that lien ahead of the bank?
No.
So we're second.
If you look at this, it used to say, will be subordinate to one mortgage for construction of the property granted by the impact fee deferral applicant.
So then it would be possible for somebody to roll that lien off then. So they had to speak with the county.
Yeah, I suppose.
But they wouldn't be able to get occupancy.
Well, we wouldn't conduct the final inspection.
Yeah, they wouldn't be able to get occupancy.
They call for the final inspection. We say, you call for the inspection. At that time, we notify you that you have to fulfill the obligation and pay the impact fees. Then we conduct the final inspection.
Yeah, but if they rolled it off, I don't think we could stop them from inspecting it. They have a legal beef and they wall off the lien. What is it, 1.5 times the lien? Is what you have to put up in cash or a bond. If the owner of the property all of a sudden has a beef with the county, and they basically say, I've got a problem legally, I'm taking legal action. You get a bond of 1.5 times the lien amount.
Good luck getting inspected, but
Well, I was asking, do we have the legal right to...
I don't know, Richard. I haven't looked at it that closely. This is something that the legislature told us to do, and frankly, I have been so busy lately that...
I'm not following you.
Yeah. So...
I think where an issue is if we have another downturn and you have builders that are losing houses halfway through. I mean, the number of houses that I went through that were halfway done in 2010, 2011. If property values then drop, the first lien holder forecloses and the value isn't there to pay off them, and that is where the county is at. So I think this is a really good step towards helping keep the cost of housing closer to affordable. I don't think it's really going to have it in the same right direction. But I like the idea of the cap of 20. So I guess that was, as I'm reading the background, it says they may cap it at 20. I guess I just didn't quite follow your answer. That is that actually in the RCWs that it's capped at 20 unless it's changed, or we need to put a cap in
if
the one cap?
I should have brought the entire bill, but it says that we it's an option for a builder to apply for this deferral, and we can defer up to 20 permits in a year. Anything over and above that, we have to adopt an ordinance locally that allows for the deferral of more than 20 in a year.
And by adopting this without that language, we are in essence not allowing.
That's what Marty said.
Yeah, we're not, we have no, by adopting this, a builder could apply for 30 deferrals in a year instead of 20.
What? Now that's not what you said.
No.
All right. So if that's your intent, then that gets us back to what you just said, which I was on track with what you were going with, which is this is a fine instrument for limited utilization, but if you're talking about an unlimited number, then I would have trouble with that compared to the idea that I thought you were saying the legislation clearly says that no developer gets more than 20 during the course of the year, therefore we didn't have to codify it.
We're looking.
All right. But I would be friendly towards entertaining the idea of introducing a cap if a cap is necessary.
What number do you think while they're looking?
I don't know where the 20 number came from, but it seemed a rational number.
Dang it.
Marty's looking at that. I could tell you about the issues that various parties have with our comp plan. I do intend to do that at some point.
Well, you're going to tell us something that wasn't in the 17 hours of testimony?
I was going to tell you what their actual appeal is about.
I imagine we can find it almost word for word.
I would like to hear it.
Yeah, I'm just joking, but yes, of course.
Okay, so here's what it says.
It won't be a shock.
It says, if the county... Hold on.
How is this codified?
That's such a tiny screen.
Oh, I don't. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's caught up. It's codified under 8202.
Thank you.
051. Okay. I used to know this stuff. Okay. It says, each applicant for a single-family residential construction permit, in accordance with his or her contractor registration number or other unique identification number, is entitled to annually receive deferrals under this section, subsection 3, for the first 20 single-family residential construction building permits per county, city, or town. A county, city, or town, however, may elect by ordinance to defer more than 20 single-family residential construction building permits for an applicant. If the county, city, or town collects impact fees on behalf of one or more school districts for which collection of impact fees could be delayed, the county, city, or town must consult with the district or districts above about the additional deferrals.
So the default, as this is written, is there's a limit at 20.
The default limit is 20.
So a builder building here in Southwest Washington can very easily go get 60 to 80 a year if they had 20 in Vancouver, 20 in Clark County, 20 in Camas, 20 in Greenfield.
Yeah. But with no one entity is deferring more than 20, as we're hearing.
So, you know, I was being efficient and I looked at what City of Vancouver was doing. I basically lifted the language from what the city introduced in their planning commission and to their city council. There was a discussion about should we limit it, should we not limit it. They said, well, we will not limit this to 20. So I assumed that the building folks would appreciate if you're building more than 20 in the Clark County and you need 25 or 30, that would be an option. I don't honestly know how many builders are going to take advantage of this. Filing a covenant and paying for recording and filing a lien and then getting it released, I'm not sure how much money you're going to save from the time that you are issued a permit to the final inspection, the carrying costs of impact fees. I just don't know that. City of Vancouver is charging, they propose to charge $440 for the privilege. And they're taking some of the burden on.
And that's per parcel?
Per application.
So there's a fee, is there an interest?
Plus recording fees are going to be at least a couple $100, unless that 440 includes it, because you're going to have to record twice. You record the lien, you're going to pay $100, and then you're going to go record the lease. That's going to be another $100.
I think Vancouver is taking that on.
They're paying that out of the 440.
That's my understanding.
That's a pretty reasonable charge then, because it's going to be at least a couple $100 just to do the recordings.
Just to process.
Yeah.
So let me see if I understand what the benefit is then. If they do get a deferral at the time they get their building permit or even their certificate of occupancy, they wouldn't have to pay impact fees. They would have 18 months or probably until the property or the house sold. I wouldn't think a mortgage company would want to pay.
Well, our ordinance says final inspection.
There's no certificate of occupancy for houses.
So
it's just a final inspection.
The 18 month is specifically from the issuance of the building permit. So this thing sunsets 18 months after the building permit, regardless of occupancy. But should they fall within that window of 18 months, and they can defer it until they get final inspection.
So the idea is, if I'm building a home, I'm going to choose a builder. Okay, so I'm going to budget, say, $15,000 in impact fees. So I pay at issuance or I pay at final inspection. If I pay at issuance, there's some carrying costs for 4, 6, 9 months for however long it's going to take to get to final inspection, or I pay at final inspection. And I think the argument is that there are some carrying costs for builders from the time that they pay at issuance to the time that there's a final inspection and somebody moving in, that goes to some affordability arguments.
Let me pick up on John's point. Let's say we go through another 2008-2011 downturn,
mm-hmm.
and the bank forecloses on the house, the county's out for gone. The county does not retrieve that money.
But nobody's occupying the home.
Yeah.
But you've issued, the city issued the permit on the home.
And without
it, it doesn't sell, it gets foreclosed. Doesn't that leave the county out in the cold?
Wait.
So we're not going to... We're not going to conduct the final inspection without payment of the impact fee. So you'd have houses partially completed, but they'll not have a final inspection. So to take any kind of occupancy, it would be an illegal occupancy.
Well, legal point of view, Chris, if the bank forecloses, that wipes everybody else out as far as liens on the property and the house. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So that would wipe the county's ability to basically.
With respect to that builder.
But then somebody else is going to have to come in and still request an occupancy.
Final inspection
to get occupancy.
And we're not going to do that until.
You could foreclose on the property.
Yeah, we can foreclose, but we are behind the bank.
Sure.
If the bank forecloses, I mean, it's an issue if the builder goes bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And the house is not finished, and the bank forecloses.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, the county still could get paid if the proceeds of the foreclosure are in excess of what the bank loaned on that property. But if it wasn't, then it would clear that lien, correct? And then a new builder comes, buys it at auction, or buys it back from the bank. That's how the county could
But then the county's going to say we're not going to send our inspector out to do our final inspection until you pay the amount, because it's owed. The money is owed. The recorded covenant gets wiped out, but I don't think that wipes out the underlying debt that's owed. At least that's how I think this thing is supposed to work. Because the county still has that hammer of not doing the final inspection, and then nobody can move into the house until that's done.
It seems like the second builder, whoever buys it at that point, though, would sue the county saying, you have no right, your lien has been removed, or would the covenant?
I have not researched this, and it would be a mess. Is that a good legal analysis?
They might have to apply for a new building permit, in which case county would have a new chance to charge the impact fee because it was never paid.
If the houses weren't completed, if the subdivision wasn't completed, there would probably have to be some building going on, which would probably require a building.
The 18 months is, in my mind, 18 months is, that's when the building permit expires. If there's no activity for 18 months, we send out a notice that actually, I think 30 or 60 or 90 days in advance that your permit is set to expire on such and such a date. We send another notice and it expires. And then any new activity, you come in for a new building permit, in which time you're gonna pay impact fees or you're gonna request a deferral again. There are a lot of what-if scenarios here, but.
So why does the covenant have to be subordinate to a mortgage? Does the county have the ability to change that provision in here?
Does the county have the ability?
I have no idea.
Then they can't get construction financing.
Yeah.
They will get construction financing, and their financing document will not permit that to be subordinated to somebody else. So.
But I think our risk here is somewhat muted. If we cap it at 20 per builder and we're in a downturn environment, I don't think we're going to be talking about a huge exposure. And as Marty pointed out, if it is such a situation, the concept of getting new building permits issued after the 18-month period really is going to put us in a situation, I think, where we'll be able to refresh that.
You will deliberate over this in a couple of weeks. I won't be here. Jan will be here. But if you are of the mind to say, well, you know, maybe we should have some limitation on this, you can recommend that we add an additional provision that says this is only valid for up to 30 deferrals in a year, or 20, or whatever.
Well, right now, right as now it's 20. It's 20.
Yeah.
Where does it say 20?
The statute says, okay, unless you by code do more than 20, it's 20.
20 per entity.
Yeah.
20 per applicant. Yeah. It's not 20 per the county.
And so I am wondering one thing, though, Marty, when you looked at the methodology that Vancouver used, and they actually penciled out the idea of the fee and what service they were going to provide, and basically penciled out the concept that they could show more or less a cost-benefit analysis, I am wondering if that will be helpful to the building community to make a decision about whether to utilize this or not. Because I hate us putting ordinances on the books that the community that we actually make them for don't utilize them or don't have an interest in utilizing them. So it sounded like the city went through a scenario, penciled something out to be able to say, by charging this much fee, but then we take on this responsibility and do this service for you, it would be easy for a builder to be able to say, should I choose to exercise this? I know here's how much it's going to cost me on my side, and this is what I get for it.
So we don't have a choice about this, right? The legislature said it has to happen.
Yeah. We have to provide this option.
Right.
Yeah.
But we're not providing as much of a service as Vancouver's choosing to do, right?
My response to that is that I have an already overwhelmed staff with overwhelmed workload. I don't want to add another piece of work, responsibility on very full plates.
Okay. That's a business decision that builders are going to have to make themselves, and I don't want the county to be in the position of saying this will be good for you financially or this will not be good for you financially.
You're missing my point, I think. In this regard, what I believe I heard Marty say, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I heard you say that they crafted this in a fashion that there was a potential as it being a revenue-generating service that also was beneficial to a greater degree to the building community rather than what we have right here, right now.
Yeah, my understanding, and I can give you all a copy of what Vancouver has introduced for comparison's sake. My recollection is that the city would charge $440, and with that they would record and file the lien, and they would release the lien. And I don't want to be in that business.
Okay. Well, then that's real clear. You don't want to be in that business.
That's right.
If this is state statute, though, we have no choice anyhow. Right.
Well, but
the choice
we don't
is 20
have to
or more.
Do the walk into the.
Yeah, we don't have to offer service beyond this.
And making sure that stuff gets done that benefits them.
Now, we can have covenants that are template covenants.
We always do.
Provide that to the builder. They can fill out the covenant. They can go to the second floor, pay for the recording, get it filed, bring a copy down to us. We have it in our file with the building, with the single family residential permit. There's something in our system that says they're not paying, but at final inspection, when they call in or request that final inspection, they have to pay it. They pay it. We show in our system that they pay the impact fees. We give them a receipt. They go up to the auditor's office on the second floor again. I've paid. I want to release the lien. Done. And I don't want to be in that transaction.
I thought you were the lien manager.
That's L-E-A-N.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not L-I-E-N.
Oh, that's a little Latin right there.
Right, Mr. Barca?
Yeah, there are more than one way to spell it, but it doesn't always mean the same thing.
This is true.
Right.
I do have one minor typo in that same line with Hall. In the very beginning, it says locally recorded without a space.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if it locally recorded is the right verbiage anyway. It probably should say recorded in the county's real property records instead of locally recorded.
Yep.
Good catch.
Yeah.
Hallmarks of being extraordinarily busy.
You must have a pretty impressive ticker file these days. Managing all your system.
And you can read the tiny text on your
phone.
I usually have to take my glasses off and hold it like right in front of my face.
You see, I'm expanding
it.
Oh,
okay. I can actually read mine if I kind of go like this. Otherwise, I'm doing this.
Need a song stick.
So,
have we heard from the school districts about how
we have somebody here from the school districts? I know that the school districts are more interested in having it at final or at certificate of occupancy, which we don't do. It's a misnomer, but not at recording. That's too late, and there's I've had many discussions about people. They would be maybe adverse looking at school levies and bonds with, hey, I just bought a house and I just had to pay $8,000. What am I gonna, you know, there's that argument. I think that it makes sense that at final inspection for single family, because you get final inspection and you get people moving in that weekend. I'll get final inspections today, tomorrow, and next week people will be moving in. So in terms of the homeowners taking possession and having the impact on the schools and the transportation and the park system, there's a temporal nature that makes sense.
And yeah, this issue's come up many times over the last 10 years. The development community's been pushing it, and we've reviewed various proposals. I don't know if the proposals ever went anywhere, but it's not a new concern by the development community to tie those impacts closer to when the fee, or tie the fee closer to when the impacts come online, to save, I don't know, I guess interest on the money for 18 months.
Well, there certainly could be a cash flow issue.
Banks don't like lending soft money like that. This is soft money.
I think that's probably what it is, more than the saving of the interest to cash flow. Because if you're selling the house to somebody who's going to move in right after final inspection, you can probably tie it all up, get it paid through closing, versus having to go get the construction loan for it up front, which you probably can't get.
Or paying 2 points up front, 10-12% on it.
Yeah, I thought that's what the legislature's thought process was from the beginning. But
so this will be on the agenda in a couple weeks, and right now we're one away from not having a quorum.
So is everybody coming in a couple weeks?
I'm not.
Okay.
There's three.
And also, we don't know about legal at this point.
What?
You know, you're... The county's prosecuting attorney's office has not failed to have an attorney there. We're worried about the quorum.
Else?
We need one more.
Well, you know that Carl. Maybe Carl will show up.
Carl Johnson.
I just sent an email.
We'll get
to all
of you for the
work session. Well, I already let you know.
But you let
option
me know.
In that's right.
Yeah.
You what kind of option?
Up to only 20. Do they want
it
this?
It doesn't need to say that.
I encourage everybody else to show up and pass this stupid thing so I don't have to hear it.
What?
I don't like
you don't like surprises.
I don't like ambiguity.
That makes sense.
Are you saying you would like to have a cap in our code that doesn't
I don't so the statute says 20.
Right.
But the statute says you can also defer more than 20.
Right.
I want something
say so by code.
I want something in the code that says
all right.
This is
and make it 20.
Okay. 20.
And then we'll have something to talk about if we were here.
I would support going as high as 30.
I'm not going to be here.
I'm not going to be here, so I'm going
to be
make
here
it.
To $5. Oh,
no. All right, it's still 20.
You guys discuss in 2 weeks.
Of course, if we put a cap on it, the next thing you know is 6 months from now, we're going to potentially be in here again when the big builders all get together and come in and say, you got to raise that cap.
To 250.
Yeah, what is the magic number?
I think that's why Marty didn't want to put it in the first place, because he's anticipating more work for everyone when we have to amend it 6 months from
if
now.
If you did 100, it'd be 120. They don't need that extra 20.
Well, how many shadows were these guys having?
Said it was tied to their contract advice.
With four.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so that's a little bit.
I'm going to put up to 30 deferrals.
You're such a pusher.
They'll just,
it's
they'll
unbelievable.
Just add 10.
And you guys can hear testimony?
I don't want a PC. Well, anyway.
Yeah. How many developers are there in the town that build more than 30 a year?
We have
probably
production builders.
Dozen, I would guess.
We have local production builders. We have national production builders.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got Lennar's active. And
Lennar, D.R. Horton.
Pacific Lifestyle.
Pacific Lifestyles.
A bunch.
Manor.
Kingston.
Oh, I represent Aho. Manor. Maybe I can't come to the hearing.
Oh, dear.
Aho.
Thanks. Apparently, Steve represents one of
them. I represent Manor.
Okay.
I don't do a lot.
Holt
for
Homes
them, but
I might be building again.
Oh, yeah, we represent Holt. Yeah.
I work for Holt.
I think I'm conflicted.
Well, the rule of necessity says that if
but if you make it 20, there's no longer a conflict.
Quorum.
Yeah, that's right. No, if you make it unlimited, I don't have a conflict anymore. But
there we go.
I'm going to start at 30, and you all can hash it out. Jan will
be
the
moderator.
Jan will be the moderator.
Okay, we'll think about this.
I probably should talk to you about conflict.
Yeah.
On this one? But you're not going to be here, so it doesn't matter.
Well, but if we're having to push this off, because
right.
We don't know.
Right.
We may actually have
so
to.
This will
right.
Be,
your conflict's
this will be
not
an issue
go away.
For me to discuss with the
there
no.
Is indeed one. It's still
well,
going to be there.
That's
two people. There's no way that Eileen would be able to say it.
I'm representing buyers, not them.
Okay.
Do you have a conflict, Mom?
I have many conflicts. None of them have to do with this ordinance.
That's very honest.
All right. Any more discussion? We'll make some of the grammatical edits, and then we'll add up to 30, and then you all hash it out, and then the plan, and then the board gets it, and they
right.
Hash it out.
Hash it out, but we gotta get something going.
Okay,
all
so
right.
You're done. You want to hear about appeals?
Yeah.
Okay, so following appeals have been filed. An appeal of the Rural Industrial Land Bank by FutureWise and Friends of Clark County as petitioners, and an appeal of the comp plan update by FutureWise and Friends of Clark County as petitioners, and an appeal of the comp plan update by Clark County Citizens United. So here are the beefs from FutureWise and Friends of Clark County. They're irritated about all the urban growth boundary expansions. They say that those are not needed to accommodate employment and residential needs. And in addition, they're particularly irritated about the La Center and Ridgefield expansions, which are on ag land. They are complain about the changes to the Ag 20 zone, Ag 20 to Ag 10, and they're perturbed about the Forest 20 to Forest 10, complaining they fail to conserve farm and forest land, protect the quantity and quality of groundwater inconsistent with the comprehensive plan. Let's see, their issues are each a half page long, so it takes me a while to scroll down. They complain that the adoption of a single rural designation, comp plan designation, excluding our rural centers. So there's only one designation if you pretend that the rural centers aren't there. But they're saying, we're going to pretend that the rural centers aren't there, so you only have one designation, and that violates the law. I, on the other hand, would pretend that the rural centers do exist and do have separate designations, but we have different points of view. They do not like the urban reserve overlay, and I can't figure out why. They say that the land is not needed to accommodate planned urban growth, and that the overlay doesn't conserve land, but all we did was change an inconsistently applied designation to an overlay, so I'm not really sure what their issue is. They say that the adoption of the transportation element violates the law because I think it has to do with the 158 So they have that one, and then they have another one that says, and the CFP violates the law for the same reason. They claim that the county did not adequately review and revise the critical areas, portions of the code, because they say there is new best available science regarding landslides post-OSO.
Oh.
And I'm going to say if that's the case, it's really new. And the Department of Commerce, neither the Department of Commerce nor the Department of Ecology was after us to do anything about it. So then they have the same three issues in this appeal that they do in the Rural Industrial Land Bank appeal. First of all, they claim that because there's a conflict in the sunset dates in the various statutes, they're taking the early sunset date, which is 2004, and they say that we're 12 years too late in adopting it. The response to that is the if that were the case, if it were that date, then there is no county in the state that would be able to adopt a rural industrial land bank. And there wouldn't have been since 2007, yet the legislature, something like three times since 2007, has extended the sunset date in another part of the statute. So they filed a dispositive motion on that. I filed a response to it. Steve Hornstein and I have filed a response to it, and the board has to rule on that. And then they complain about de-designation of ag lands.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
See you guys.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Yep.
And they complain about failing to comply with the requirements for industrial land banks. And then their last issue is a complaint about something that hasn't, well, I guess it has happened now, but it hadn't happened as of the time they filed this petition for review. It certainly hadn't happened when the county took its action, and the county doesn't do it. So, issue 12 is, does the annexation of land within an urban growth area expansion under appeal violate, you know, everything under the sun, or any other applicable provision of state law? So the county doesn't annex land, the cities do that. Anyway, I'll be filing a motion to dismiss that one. The board doesn't have jurisdiction over it. So let's see. The three cities with urban growth issues have all filed to intervene, and the Milt Brown companies north of Ridgefield in that area have filed to intervene, and then I forget the name of the landowner in La Center has filed to intervene. So that's that one. The CCCU petition has 13 issues.
Who's their attorney?
Their attorney is Heather Burgess. Do you know Heather Burgess, Steve? She's in Olympia.
Yeah.
Phillips Burgess, I think, is the name.
Later to the county lawyers.
I have no clue. So
we've seen her before.
If I can ever get this fine piece of technology to cooperate, here we go. I will get to the CCCU filing. She's in the Army too?
Because
the other one, Clark, went to law school, paid for by the Army.
So she served 13 years active duty with the U.S. Army, six as a judge advocate, and she continues to serve as a judge advocate in the National Guard.
Okay, so this, wow.
She's admitted to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces.
I wonder how much land use they do.
What does that mean? She represents the armed forces in the Court of Appeals?
Probably. I don't know. No, she says Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is one of the courts that she's admitted to.
So I'm skipping the first many pages, many unnecessary pages of the petition for review. I'm getting right to the issues.
Is charged per word? Is that the
deal? Per word?
Per word?
Yeah, you mean like Dickens?
I beg your pardon?
Like Dickens?
Yeah.
Isn't Dickens paid per
yes,
word? Which
is that is what it does.
Lengthy tomes?
Lots of good description.
I couldn't get through Blue Jazz. I had to drop the class and take a different class in college because they wanted me to read Blue Jazz. I got about 200 pages into it. I'm not going to do any more of this.
You just didn't do the Cliff Notes?
I actually wanted to learn something, so.
You did. You learned that they can write in the words.
Yeah, I switched into a class that I paid attention to.
County cut corners and flagrantly violated timing requirements.
Are you still trying to figure out what CCCU is complaining about?
I mean,
oh no, I'm trying to get to their issues in their petition for review. Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay, the first one is, did the county's adoption violate a bunch of stuff? When the county adopted a public participation plan in January 2014, but started work on the update in 2013. That's their first issue. Their second issue, says the county plan update relies on part on amended countywide planning policies and amended countywide community framework plan without the county first adopting a process to amend or update the CFPs or CPPs. Well, there were no amendments to the CFPs, not one. And the county, by the way, the Department of Commerce has sent the county this glowing thing about the wonderfulness of the public participation process. So, okay, third, did the 2016 plan update constitute an impermissible de facto comprehensive plan amendment? Because the county never adopted or completed required review of the Growing Healthier Report, the Aging Readiness Plan, the Ag Preservation Strategies Report, and the Clark County Bicycle and Ped Plan. Those things are all listed as reference documents in the plan. But they are not listed as part of the plan. Does the 2016 plan update violate public participation requirements by routinely and systematically excluding rural and resource landowners? In the designation of ag and forest lands, an amendment of resource-related development regulations and zoning maps, does the county violate WAC 365, 195, 050, that's, and 060? Those are all the factors for designating forest and farmland. Does the 2016 plan update violate GMA because the county unlawfully applied assumptions from a rural vacant buildable lands model to cap rural growth projection? G, does it violate the WAC in designating rural lands? when the plan disregards and misapplies predominant parcel size and density and rural character. So these are pretty much what they would say every week.
Yeah.
Does the plan violate the WACs because the county relied on a 90-10 urban to rural population split projection when the historical population allocation has averaged closer to 85 urban and 15 rural split? Does the plan update the RCW because the county unlawfully, I don't understand this one, unlawfully relied on population projections by the Office of Financial Management, which do not take into account the population influences resulting from Clark County's proximity to the Portland, Oregon metropolitan area? We're required to use the OFM numbers unless they're very specific findings that we can't. Does the 2016 plan update violate the law when historical remainder parcels in rural developments are included in urban growth areas as potentially developable? So no remainder was taken into a UGA this time. That was in 2007. And the remainder is right behind a particular CCCU member's yard. And this is going to be developed.
Dear.
What general area is that?
Richfield. Okay, does the plan update violate goal number 6 under the GMA? That's the private property rights goal. When Clark County failed to consider the private property rights impacts. Does the plan violate SEPA when the county failed to conduct environmental review under SEPA on material elements of the plan, including but not limited to the Aging Readiness Plan, the Growing Healthier Report, and the remnants from approximately 36,000 square acres of land that were erroneously designated in agroforest under the county's 1994 comprehensive plan?
Well,
and it does say square acres.
I was going to ask you about that. Square acres.
That's what it says. That's what it says. I get whatever.
Mineral rights, air rights. Yeah.
So, this is Burgess's work?
Apparently.
Heather Burgess. And somebody or other Clark.
They were square.
Did the county violate RCW 36, 78, 106 and the WAC when it approved the 2016 plan update fewer than 60 days after forwarding it to the Washington Department of Commerce, which it actually didn't do, was 60 days. So it's Heather Burgess and Leslie Clark is her associate on. You know her?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
I never heard of that film.
Okay. Beg pardon?
Oh.
Well, this might be Leslie. I don't know how she pronounces it. I know it's a woman, but anyway, there we are.
Well, none of that sounds shocking after all the testimony.
I filed a motion to consolidate the two update appeals because I don't want to have to fight about resource and rural lands twice, and we don't have to want to have to deal with a record twice and things like that. And so FutureWise has responded to my motion by sending out an opposition to it today. So anyway.
Does this take years, do you think, to wind through?
Sure. It won't take years at the growth board. But I don't assume that the growth board will
be the end of the story. There'll be an appeal after that.
And one after that.
Mm-hmm.
So this man be your the the question, right? You may have never asked the question. Is the county taking application on resource land currently?
Yes.
For, so someone has Forest 20 that became Forest 10, they can apply right now for...
If they have Forest 40 that became 20.
Yeah.
Yes, or Ag 20 that became Ag 10. Yeah.
That's the last thing about that.
The legislation is presumed valid and it's effective until it is declared invalid.
They haven't asked for any kind of stay, and I'm not sure if they even can.
I think in 2007 somebody tried that and they couldn't do it. And that was when Richfield adopted and annexed all that property in.
I would think that the cure is to go, if there's a cure, it would involve the annexation, not the appeal. But the county doesn't do annexations. So
right.
I don't appear.
Well, but John's talking about people filing applications.
Yeah, they can.
And if in the rural area, not the annexed, but you know, if you have a piece of Ag 10 out in the middle of nowhere, you can now go in and get it divided into 10-acre pieces or clusters or whatnot. And as soon as you apply, I think you might be vested
under vested.
The land use statutes and the subdivision statutes for vesting.
That would be my assessment.
And I don't think there's any real way anybody can do that, because I looked at the statute, the growth management statute. I didn't see any authority for the hearings board to issue any stay of the local comp plan while it conducts its review.
Yeah, I haven't seen one either. So there it is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So are you guys leading the effort, or are you?
Well, there are some issues in which I think the county has the strongest interest, and some issues in which the property owners and cities may have stronger interests. And, you know, the board, when they did the urban growth boundary expansions, tried to do them conditionally. You can't really legislate conditionally like that, but they tried to say, provided that the city has to defend this. And the way I view that is they're just making their really strong preference known to the city that if you want this land in your urban growth boundary, you better be prepared to fight for it. And in fact, they have all three cities have intervened. So.
Because you're not recused or eliminated from it?
No. That's done.
All right.
Okay, thank you all.
We adjourned.